Welcome to The Sharing Culture, the show that talks about sharing, who does it, why, the history, and a whole lot in between. I'm your host and executive director of Equitable Giving Circle, AJ McCrary. Today, we're talking about reparations with Ms. Joy Elise Davis, who is the ED, the president, CEO of Imagine Black Futures, which is an incredible organization here in Portland, both supporting political power, but also building community in a variety of different ways. We also have a book recommendation and a sharing activity for all of you today. So make sure that you listen all the way through so you don't miss out. I'm looking forward to sharing with you all today. Welcome, welcome, Ms. Joy Elise.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. This is beautiful.
I'm very excited to have you. Just so people can get a little background around you, you've been an organizer for a long time. You do so many amazing things at Imagine Black Futures, including a new app that you guys have put out, which is cool. We're very excited about it. EGC is on the app. Y'all should come and get on the app with us.
Please.
Tell us a little bit about your work at Imagine Black Futures. I know because y'all endorsed me.
Yeah, we did. Very proud of that endorsement.
Very proud of it, too.
So we are Black-led, Black-serving nonprofit here in Oregon. We actually had a different name. We were founded in 2009. Mm-hmm. We were previously known as the Portland African American Leadership Forum, and we changed our name 10 years in to
it
kind
was
of
PALF, right?
PALF, yeah. We changed our name 10 years in because we wanted to switch it up a little bit. We were mindful of what the Black community needed from us in this moment, and we're really grounded in this concept of like Afrofuturists and dreaming up new realities. It feels kind of sci-fi at times, but we know this world was like designed and dreamt up by someone, and both the beautiful things about it, but also the harmful parts of it. And we know that we can dream up a better way of being, and we can build and use our skills like policy and organizing and supporting great orgs like yours and the folks who are just doing the work and recognizing that sometimes you need a dream and a clear vision and have different folks do the things they love to get us closer to that vision.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Y'all do so many amazing things, from the Bonnets bike ride. Yes. I hope there's another one coming up. I'm telling on myself, might be a time that I'll go outside.
Yes, come through.
You guys have been doing photo shoots recently. You were at Good in the Hood doing a beautiful photo shoot. Mm-hmm. Those are really cool. What are some of the things that you're doing right now? I mean, there's a lot that y'all do, supporting candidates, building, yeah. Like you guys have workshops. What mm-hmm. are some of the things that you're doing right now?
Yeah, we, you hit it. We like connecting to Black people. And when you mentioned the Bonnets and Durags bike ride, we're like, how do we want to get involved in active transportation? But let's be honest, when I go out, I don't want to wear a helmet. Sometimes I believe in a helmet, wear a helmet. But like, I need my bonnet underneath. I need to make sure I'm protected. We try to find creative ways to get involved in government and dream up new ways and policies. But we're taking some photos again. So in 2019, we did the Albina Queens Project for the first time. We photographed 100 Black women and friends who live, work, and play in North Northeast Portland. We wanted to honor them. We wanted to let them know that we see them and that you're not going to be erased in this space as things are changing, good things coming back, bad things hopefully stopping. We've been really into that app you mentioned, our Black Possibilities app. This has That's been a cool. long time coming. We just are mindful that, well, let me back up. We're really interested in this moment of thinking about community care. And I'm reading this book, Healing Justice Lineages, I might mess up the title, by Kara Page. And it just talks about healing justice and recognizing that we, as Black people, just people in general, we heal with community. And it's not enough for us to, do that healing justice. We also need to fight for each other. So we need to advocate for them. We need to feed each other. We need to do all these things all wrapped around community care. And we know that there are great orgs like yours that are doing that work of feeding folks in our lane. And I think it's not, I think sometimes people are like, oh, it's a versus. No, it's an and. Like, we need people feeding. We need people helping the young babies and making sure they're doing the things they need. And we need folks to advocate. So we're really interested in elections. You know, next year is going to be a really, a challenging year is probably the nice way of saying it. It's going to be a challenging year in 2024. We're preparing. We're building Black political power. That's that's the thread. And we're hoping to do that through creativity, making it fun and exciting, and also making sure that it feels very Black and that we're not sacrificing our culture as we are, you know, interacting with the system that was designed to harm us, that we're flipping and making it work for us.
I love that. I love that. I hope all of y'all who are listening absolutely check out their work, support, learn about, attend their events. Y'all have had quite a bit of amazing workshops this summer. I know there's another one coming up. It's our friend Bruce Poinsett was just messaged me, couldn't come to something. He's like, I'm doing a workshop with Imagine Black Futures, which is amazing. And I love to hear that. You guys are, yeah, I love to see. And I love that you're really clear about this is our lane and this is what we're building, and we're building alongside and with. I think that, as you mentioned, there sometimes is this push to, well, why can't you do everything, or you're doing this well, why can't you dabble in this? But we don't operate or work in silos. We actually do better when we are working on, like, this is our thing, and we get to collaborate or support with these other community organizations. Because that's how we feel at EGC. Like, this is what we do. You know, food access, housing initiatives, and community wellness work. And we are happy to collaborate with other people who do other things. And we're all stronger in that way when we are, like, in community, engaged and thoughtful in that way. And I love that that is how you guys are coming to the table and how you guys move through the world.
It's a beautiful ecosystem. We need each other. Like,
we do.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting to, like, get to hear about what other folks are doing, because it is, like, in tandem, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. And it all does work together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that if we're advocating for policies, but folks aren't fed, things aren't, like, we're not doing the work, you know? Like, it does require us to work together, even if it is, like, cheering each other on from the distance. Like, that, I don't know, this work is hard, and it's nice to know that they're great orgs doing their work and not, working in collaboration.
Well, I think that's the thing, though, is, like, it is a lot to be trying to push policy or read up on policy or influence or lobby or just function in that. It's also a different, you know, 501c versus a
501(c)(4). All these rules.
So there's those that you have to navigate. And then on the other side, direct services takes up all the time, so it doesn't make it so that, like, to do direct service and advocate at the same, like,
it's
there's
hard.
There's advocating that happens through that, but it's not,
I know,
yeah, it's not the same. So it is,
skills. It's like, the things that I've seen other nonprofits do, like, I'm so inspired and, like, amazed by it. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know how you did it. Like, how did you make this program happen? This event happen? It's both, like, a learning thing, but also recognizing, like, for example, I'm not a person who's great at finance. I think finance is super important. Like, I need you to do your finance, and I'm in awe by it, but I'm not going to do it well.
I mean, but that's also, like, we need each other. We've, like, been pushed in this capitalistic society that is all about the individuals, and that's how capitalism thrives and grows.
Mm-hmm.
Where in reality, we actually need each other, because what I'm good at is not necessarily your strength and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And together, in collaboration, we can do amazing things. Yes. Like, a lot of the things that we hold sacred are interesting. We use the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
One individual does not build a pyramid. And there's tons of pyramids everywhere. Google is your friend, y'all. I'm not necessarily referencing the ones you thought I was. Ha! But, like, that's a huge project. And, you know, people are always amazed by that.
Mm-hmm.
One individual didn't orchestrate that. That was a huge collaboration with all kinds of people, from the engineers to the stone builders to the workers and a whole bunch of people in between. So, you know, in us building things today, well, it might not look like a pyramid. It's all of us need to be at the table with all of our different skills.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well said.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about sharing.
Yes.
Get us, I guess not started, because we're already off to a great conversation. What was your most favorite thing that anyone has shared with you? These are rapid fire questions.
I know, rapid fire. Can I do two? I should do one.
You could do two.
Okay. shout out to the same person who told me this. The first, my husband often says the information is in the spirit. Don't know where he got it, but he says it a lot. And every time I'm stressed out and I feel like I don't know where to go next, it reminds me that, like, my ancestors knew how to, like, you know, like, might not be the exact conditions, but that I have all the information in me, even if I, it's, and it takes some time to pull out, but it's there. Another.
I love that. Wait, say that one more time, because I just want this to sink in for everybody.
The information is in the spirit.
That is so beautiful. Mm. That's really powerful.
Shout out to Rob Lewis. Yes. He drops these gems on me. The part two, also something he told me, but it's a quote from Gucci that I'm not super proud that it's from Gucci. But he told me this. The quote is, and I'm reading it so I don't mess it up, but it says, if a man does not have sauce, then he is lost. But the same man can get lost in the sauce. Wisdom. Damn. Drop mic. Yes.
That's, yeah.
Don't get lost in the sauce.
I think a lot of people get lost in the sauce.
Yes. Yeah. Not having good balance. Oh, my gosh. Like, it's, we have all these beautiful talents and passions, but ooh, if you're not in balance with it, that's how I interpret it. Like, you get lost in it. You can lose yourself in it.
Yeah. I think it's also, it's like being focused on all the other things, but not like that. What's the core? What's the foundation? What is the table? Like, that is where a lot of the magic is. Like, I always say that to people that, you know, the magic happens in the implementation, in the movement, but to be able to be thoughtful about the movement, the implementation, like the actually of the doing, you have to be very, very aware of that foundation. You cannot get lost in the sauce.
Can't get lost in it.
Ugh, I think I'm going to be borrowing both of those. Oh, thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Gucci.
All right. What was the most meaningful thing that you've shared with somebody?
You know, I would say I love reminding folks they deserve to be in the space. I used to say this to myself a lot before I was in spaces I felt uncomfortable with, or spaces that I had, like, imposter syndrome, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be here. They don't know that, not making it up, but, like, I'm trying to figure things out. And I would look at myself in the mirror. I'm not a big mantra, but it was, like, my only mantra. And I often share with folks, like, you deserve to be here. You don't have to be perfect. And no one is, but you have something to contribute to add. So
I love that. I think that's a good reminder for everybody. It's like Mama Donna said this to me the other day. She was, I don't remember exactly where we started this conversation, but she was, there were other people there, and she was like reminding folks that everybody is special and like slow down and to not gloss over that. And I think that like goes with it. Like, everybody is unique and special, and you do belong to be here, like, with whatever talents, you know, whatever you got. Like, I love that.
I'm going to take that one with me.
Yeah. I take her along with me. She's my new, what if I'm the truth teller? She's my storyteller. Yes. You have to listen to the other podcast to catch that, what I'm referencing. See what I did there, y'all?
Just a little plug. Yeah.
I love that. All right. What do you share the most?
What do I share? The rapid response. I think I share my love for Black people the most. I love me some Black people. I'm in awe of us. And our I hate the word resilience because it's so, you know, played. But gosh, we're so resilient. And we're not supposed to be here. And it's... I love that we fought and we're still here. And, like, they thought they had us, but, like, it's like I'm dancing in the background. Like, you can't get rid of us. So, yeah, I often share my love with folks.
I love that. And I love that because I think sometimes we as a society in the way that we are engaging with sharing as a culture, as just a vibe, we think that sharing just has to be a physical thing. Like, I'm going to share a cup of coffee with you. I'm going to share, you know, lunch with you or something, or I'm sharing a physical thing that I can hand to you. But sharing also is a vibe. It's an intention. It's holding space. It's creating space.
Even when it's hard, because gosh, it is hard. But I just hold on to that. I just love Black people.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah, you do. I do too. Yeah, I love our community. I love our culture.
I love our, I do love our resilience. I know that's a weird thing, as you mentioned, to say, but our resilience is so powerful. And, you know, it's one of those things like on our darkest day and like as we're like on our mini computers and have different conveniences to remember, like, what did our ancestors go through and what, like, if they could manage and keep moving forward? Oh, I absolutely can.
Yes, you can.
Like, I got this. Yeah. And and to hold on to that wisdom that, you know, they have given us, and it is in our spirit to be quiet for a minute. Ooh. The whole TED Talk right there.
Trying to stop myself from snapping. Yes.
You can snap.
Okay. Snap. Love.
We absolutely can snap. That's the great thing about creating your own tables, about creating your own projects, is that we create the rules. We can do the things that make sense and feel good for us. Yes, you can absolutely snap.
I will be snapping.
I appreciate that more than crying, because we cried a little bit on one podcast.
I can't make any promises. Tears may come through.
It's all good. It was like good love, like vibes and tears, lots of respect. And I love, like, in our, just the way that we're building community, getting to like actually hold space for all of our emotions. Like, that's such an exciting and different thing, even if they from our childhood.
Yes.
Yeah. I love it. All right. So I have another question for you. It's kind of our segue questions to get into the meat of our conversation. But what radicalized you?
Ooh, I love this question. I love it and I hate it at the same time. Like, damn, I shouldn't have to have experienced that or witnessed that or even been in the time of it. But I remember when I was, and I like to say I'm a young, and I don't know if that still holds true in this world, but when I graduated high school was around the time the Gen 6 trials happened.
Okay.
And I remember, and I have moments where I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I remember when I was in like middle school, there was a really big murder of a young Black man by a police. And I remember experiencing that, but it hit me differently in Gen 6 when I experienced racism up close too, but it was in that moment that I was like, this is like, I was starting to get the language and the tools around the systematic issues. If folks remember, and I probably should have this moment memorized a little bit more, but, you know, Black men, boys, gosh, they were like high school. They were getting in trouble for a fight that they had with a white boy. And I remember the amount of like nooses that were hung up around the country. And I remember the fear I had of like, oh, shoot, like they're reminding us that like they could still lynch us. And it was whether it's like through police and the prison system or like physically, they wanted to let us know that they still had that power, so to speak. And I will never forget just being like pissed off and angry. And I joined my little NAACP in college. And I remember we had like they hung one at our campus and we all wore black. And that was like my first protest. And in that moment, I was like, yeah, I want to fight for our right to be here. Like, we deserve to be here without fear. In that moment, I will never forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild that many of us have like real pointed. And it's sometimes I think it's like we're already predispositioned to like, you know, we have skin in this game. So it's, we're already predispositioned in a lot of ways to want to step up. But a lot of us that do community work in these really loud and profound ways, and I'm giving us our flowers today because what we do is amazing and special and unique in this landscape that we're not even supposed to exist in. We have these, many of us have these similar stories or experiences, similar things sort of made us be like, wait, what? Why is this happening? And it's always interesting on the flip side to see that like a lot of white people also witnessed and experienced these similar things and it didn't radicalize them.
It didn't.
Or that they were radicalized for like 45 minutes.
It,
because we're all the radicals from 2020.
Come on.
Where are you all at?
I had a moment where I had to remember that we all have a moment, because I was like, oh, you just joined us in 2020. I had a little bit of like, you know, elitism, like, oh, you're new, like, sit down. And I was like, no, Joy, you once had a moment, but it's the long work, like you said, the long term. What did you do after that moment? I think.
But
is
you were.
Important.
But it's also like you were a teenager.
Oh, I was
when
a baby.
You were radicalized, right? Yeah. Like I was radicalized when I was real little, mm-hmm. right? Like I knew something was off navigating the world.
Yes.
With a Black father and my Black family, and my white mother, mm-hmm. right? All mm-hmm. these other people, like my mom's family was not accessible or present in that way. So I knew from the jump, because me and my siblings, we all a different color.
Yeah.
We all look similar, but we're all different levels of ink. And I'm okay with it. I can make jokes about it. You can too. It's hilarious. You know, so I always have been like, oh, this is something's off. And there have been these different events, like interpersonally and externally, that have definitely, you know, fueled the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at our white counterparts, how is it that you are also navigating this world, but not radicalized, not, I mean, we know why, but it's
wild to me.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I'm thinking about the Gen of Six. I remember being in the cafeteria in college, seeing CNN on the news playing, watching it. And I don't know if people stepped away with the same information or the same call to action. To me, that was a call. And gosh, I'm so bad at quotes, which is going to be my thing for the rest of my life. I'm like, who said this? Put that quote around, let this moment move into action and not despair. Like,
yeah,
I saw it and I was hurt. You know, I was like, that could be my cousin, my brother. Like I named people in my life that could have easily been, that could have been me, like easy. And then it moved me into wanting to make it different. And I, it breaks my heart that some folks see it and they just ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Or that they think that it's like it's too big for them to tap in, or that they get fatigue. I feel like, you know, like yeah. in the last year, we've heard a lot about like white folks fatigue and like, you tired? You're tired?
It's been 3 years, bruh. Like, yeah.
Oh, you need to drink a little coffee and less roll. Like, there's a lot of work to do. This isn't a, you don't get to tap out.
It's
you don't get to, like, have awakening and then say, like, I'm going to brunch. I'll be back in a month or two.
Your little, like, your one workshop was not enough. Like, yeah, it's
forever work.
It's forever. And it's hard knowing that the labor and the contributions you have to the space, you might not see in your lifetime. And, like, there's a lot of trust with that and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. But like, I know that I'm only here. We're only here because someone, you know, someone put in the work that they never got to physically see.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I think if we all would put in some labor, some of us wouldn't have to hold so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think some of that speaks to, though, too, that we're talking about legacy work, right? Mm-hmm. Like you and I are holding torches. I talk about this all the time. Yes. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, both yes. like, people I physically actually know and have access to, and folks that, like, this is, you know, I talk about Booker T. Watley a lot. He's mm-hmm. the Black man that designed, came up with the Community Supported Agriculture, CSA. Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that.
Shout out to him. He's amazing.
I need to take some notes.
You can come into my house and look at his fancy book.
Okay.
I have one of his rare books in my house. But we're doing legacy work. We are standing on the shoulders of giants. And I think a lot of people that are not Black and that are curious about anti-racism work, or they were, you know, got riled up one time in 2020, they don't realize that, like, on the counter side, like, you also are doing legacy work to dismantle the harm that is your legacy.
Yes.
And the way, I mean, definitely, I think the seat that I see, because I see it from, like, both sides of my family, of, like, for Black people, it's picking up and, like, we're talking about resilience and moving it forward. For white mm-hmm. people, it's picking up shame and mm-hmm. embarrassment. And we talked about this a little earlier about, mm-hmm. you know, our 2023 relationship with accountability and
yes.
conflict. And a lot of white people show their asses where they're not really willing to address Say accountability. It. They're not really willing to address, you know, their relationship with this legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of brings us to this perfect yes. segue to one of my favorite words, reparations.
Yes, reparations.
Which people act like is a really scary word.
It's not a radical word.
It's like, not. You know, when I first started getting really loud about reparations, which was probably a good like 6 or 7 years ago, mm-hmm. And was just like really talking about it. I remember having somebody that's a mentor of mine. She's like maybe 10 years older. And she pulled me aside and was like, AJ, you can't be just saying that word. And I was like, why? Is the boogeyman going to come out? Like, you know that thing that people do in the mirror and they say whatever. I don't remember whatever.
Yes. Like, this scary and someone lady comes through. In oh, the yes. mirror.
I was like, what is this light?
Will we get the reparations?
Yes. I was like, let's turn the lights off.
Do I say
it
three
thing.
Times? Like,
do I have to do a dance? Like, what is it? Like, how does it? And she was very much like, you're ridiculous. And no, you're not. Your message is going to get lost. You're scary. Cool. And I was like, no, I think your message is lost mm-hmm. because what? No, this is, it's not a scary word. Mm-hmm. And it's really, reparations is a type of sharing. We're asking for our resources yes. to be returned back. So share yes. what you done stole, what
it's
you done
ours.
Took.
Yeah.
Give it back. Mm-hmm. Replenish what is gone. And it's not a scary word because we also saw that like our country has engaged with reparations to the Jewish community.
Other folks get it.
To the Japanese community mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in weird, small ways to our indigenous communities. Not mm-hmm. in an appropriate way.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Some false solutions.
They dabbled yeah. in it in some weird toxic mm-hmm. way to make themselves feel better, but not the actual communities that they have harmed.
100%.
So it's not an unfamiliar word or a concept.
It's not.
And it's not scary. And I wish that people would realize that, like, as an individual, like each individual can be pro reparations and helping move the mark because it's also yes. be engaged with it differently. We yes. will see a different result.
I won't say it's life work, but it feels like life work. Like there's been lifetime stolen, wealth stolen, lives stolen.
It
will take so much more than this moment to get everything back. And it does require constantly doing it. I used to have a thing where I would see folks doing small acts of reparations. And at first I didn't get it. And I was like, that's not what we want. We don't need this. We need something bigger. And as I matured in this space and learned, I was like, no, this is life's work. Like, it requires constant giving back. Mm-hmm. And it breaks my heart that generations past have been manipulated or their narrative has been manipulated to make them think that it's a dirty word. It's like capitalism. It's like, it wasn't until recently folks started talking about it. It was like a scary thing that Voldemort or something, like you can't yeah. say it. And I'm like, yo, reparations is what we're owed. Capitalism is a system. We don't have to live it. Like,
yeah,
it was created. It could be, we can just, mm-hmm. you know, we could dismantle it. We yeah. can abolish it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're going to, I guess yes. I got ahead of myself a little, but I was really excited. I still am excited. Tell us about, because reparations are very much tied to Black political power.
It is.
But tell us a little bit about Black political power. What does this mean? Mm-hmm. What does this look like? And what do we need to be doing as a collective to support Black political power? Just all of your thoughts.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
my gosh.
A big question.
I love a good opportunity for some rants and some.
Let's go.
I like to think and talk, but Black political power, you know, I think very often when we talk about getting involved in the government, it's always very transactional and it's always on their terms. It's like, and there's spaces that I participate in that I also wish were better. It's like, oh, there's a committee or there's a testifying. And I think those things are important. But they're only transactional unless it's building towards something that we are owning ourselves, that we are an agenda that we are pushing. I'm a person, I don't believe that politics alone will save us, but I do believe it is a tool in our toolbox that we must mm-hmm. use alongside other tools to get us closer to liberation. So for me, it looks like it's not enough for me to just tell someone to vote. I actually need to walk through and say, like, this politician is harming you, no matter what they're saying. Like, these are the receipts type of, and, oh, this bill or ballot measure, like, this might be exciting on paper, but there's actually some complicated nature to it. I think it's holding space to learn together, to not, mm-hmm. To, what's the word, like, disarm, like, lies, essentially, like looking at something and saying, you know what, I'm going to spend a little bit of time to make sure that they're telling me the truth here, because there are real life consequences for me opting out or me choosing something wrong. Let's be honest. Like I think a lot of folks got radicalized during Trump's administration. I think it was the first time folks realized that their vote actually mattered, and that it wasn't just a president thing, that there was all the way down the ballot, that there are decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think City of Portland is learning right now that like the impacts of your decisions have real life consequences. And it may be fun and jokes like, oh, I'm just going to vote for this terrible person. Ha ha. Like, no, like when they get in office, are you willing to look at yourself and say that you sacrificed someone's well-being because you wanted to make a joke vote, or you were so interested in your own and not understanding how you're part of the collective or the community? Mm-hmm. So for us at Imagine Black, we're interested in building Black political power. For us, it's not enough to just vote. We want to elect candidates that represent our perspective and our agenda. And sometimes that looks like Black candidates, and sometimes that does not look like supporting Black candidates that are lying to us about what their agenda is. It's asking clear questions. It's saying, okay, I can look on your website, but I actually need to hold you up. I need to hold your policy up to my policy and see where that lies, my agenda. Yeah. What I loved so much about the time I got to interview you for our debate is I got a chance I think that was my first time really meeting you, which is embarrassing right now to say out loud, because I can't imagine like not knowing you, but being able to hear your platform and what you believe in and see how closely it aligned not only to my own, but the org's, like that was a powerful moment of, I don't know, exerting our Black political power. That's what mm-hmm. that's about. It's when we do get folks into office, how do we hold them accountable? How do we say, you know what, you're there, I'm not just going to walk away. People need accountability. Some people stray. Some people get manipulated. Some people are playing mm-hmm. this political game, and you need to remind them that people got their back and they elected you to do a thing. So that accountability yeah. is about political power. That community organizing, like we can't do this work without bringing people together and going through political education together, learning together. You mentioned some of the workshops that we're piloting right now on our app. We're doing so many workshops and we're like, we have to hold space for political education to hear about our history, to know that there are some things that are new and some things, there's nothing new fully under the sun. Like we've been mm-hmm. through this before and we can learn some great lessons and let go of some things that didn't work. So for us, it's really about building political power is being active in elections and not being satisfied with what is given and pushing back for what we deserve. Mm-hmm. Building community, organizing, political education, and it's holding people accountable and having the wisdom to get rid of them when they're not serving us. And I think that's the part I'm really excited about in the future is to say, like, you're not it anymore. And no disrespect. Sometimes there is some disrespect. and we're going to move on to someone who's ready for this time that we need right now. Yeah.
I love y'all's process. So those that are listening might not know Imagine Black's endorsement process, but it's beyond just a quick little sheet of questions, so sometimes when we're looking at who endorses candidates mm-hmm. Or a full-fledged politician, the way that endorsement happened might just be a questionnaire, which might not even be filled out by the candidate. It could be their team. And then it's just that. And y'all's process is a little more in depth. It is requiring, like, you go through the questions. You do all the questions. There's an interview. But then there's also a pledge that you have to pledge that you are not going to take police dollars, but that you really are going to hold the line that, like, the police ain't it.
Oh, yeah. People are mad about it. I'm not going to lie. People are absolutely upset. I mean, our questionnaire, we have a lot of yes or no questions. And mm-hmm. some politicians are like, but I can't answer that. There's more I need to say. And I was like, nope. We have a question. Do you support reparations for Black people? Yes or no. There's no middle ground here. Either you support it or you don't. Do you support land back so that Indigenous folks will have their land back? Like, yes or no. Like, there's no politicking this. Like, either you believe or you don't. But yeah, our pledge is something that we started in 2020, and I don't think it's very extremist, but there's some folks in the state legislature that have called us Black extremists, and I was like,
oh my gosh.
Because we're asking you to not take dollars, to not be swayed by someone you're supposed to be holding accountable, to put people before profit, to put people before police. The police are supposed to serve us, not the other way around, mm-hmm. and it's been really telling that's how folks have resisted it, and really telling how folks embrace it full. And they're like, yeah, I would never take police money. I'll sign it today. Like, that has been a beautiful moment. And it's been really disheartening to watch some older politicians in particular tell us it's too radical. And I was like, oof, you're not going to like the future that we're pushing for then, because this is nothing.
Well, I loved that your process and how clear and it really, it is value aligned. I took like y'all's endorsement was like probably my most proudest endorsement, because it was like this, I align with their values, with their goals of this organization and the group of people that they're, you know, that Imagine Black Futures represent. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people who are not, haven't went through the process or aren't deeply involved in politics, like really understand that. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think it's just really beautiful and thoughtful, the way that y'all do that. And it really is like being aligned with the people and these goals. And I mean, the whole thing of like taking police dollars, I don't think a lot of people realize that is we're not holding, you know, our politicians or candidates to any sort of standard. And there's a lot of folks that are taking money and persuade in ways that are very inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And there aren't the checks and balances that people think with politicians or even candidates.
No, there's not. It's, I think there's a lot of misconceptions that by taking the pledge, it means you can't. Some people are like, we can't take the pledge. We want to work with police. I was like, we never told you not to. We want you to hold them accountable and come from a place of strength. Mm-hmm. And I also forgot to mention in our endorsement process, all of our membership gets to weigh in on what it looks like. It takes a little bit longer. So sometimes people freak out. I was like, no, it takes the speed of equity. What's that whole phrase? Like, it takes some time. I'm dropping some half quotes at y'all today. But
great wisdom. She's dropping fantastic wisdom.
But it takes, we want to hear from folks how they feel. Like, tell us, would you support this person? If you feel comfortable, tell us in the comments. Join us in the interviews. It's mm-hmm. not something that just a small group of people should be making decisions alone about this endorsement. And to the best of our knowledge, we are the first Black-led political org in the state. And we take that seriously. We know we're not for everybody, but we're progressive and we want to push progressive policies.
Yeah, I think the process was really beautiful and thoughtful. And I think that is something that we need in political spaces, because it's not a thoughtful space. It's not, and it's not like that relationship with accountability in this space is not what people like in reality. I mean, look at what's happening right now in at the city level, the state level, regionally, on the West Coast, federally, you know, globally. Once these people, once they get past being a candidate and once they get into office, they aren't the same checks and balances. And most people just kind of forget about what these folks are doing until the next cycle where they're trying to get reelected. And there's a lot of stuff that happens that is not value aligned or even aligned with the campaigns that they ran.
Oh, no. There's my last ran, and I'm picking on City of Portland, but I believe every, including the mayor and the city, they're all claimed to be Democrats. And I typically vote within the Democratic Party or the Working Families Party. And the policies that I've seen over the last year alone are not policies of that any Democrat I've ever seen. And it's like, wow, the reality is that a lot of folks are pretending to be something that they're not and assuming we're not paying attention. And I think we're at Imagine Black. We're like, nope, we are watching you. And we're taking screenshots, not only, and we're going to come back and remind people of what you said and how you voted and how that has impacted. And hopefully that allows, you know, for some more accountability, or at least for these politicians to be honest about where they're, who they're held accountable to. Are these people or is it these businesses, you know?
Fact. Mm. I will say, just a shameless plug, as election season is coming upon us, everybody, please pay attention to Imagine Black's endorsement process, who they're endorsing. It is the best voter guide that we have. It's very practical. It's very informative. Mm-hmm. It's my go-to. Yeah. This last fall, I wasn't on the ballot, thankfully. for me. But I had a lot of people reaching out, asking me, like, who to vote for, you know, what is this? And I was like, by all means, first, please reference Imagine Black voter guide. And then if you have additional questions after you've read that thoroughly, then I'm happy to talk to you, but not until you've done that, because most likely your answers are going to be answered. Mm-hmm. You're going to be informed. I also do believe in everyone doing their own homework. But it's just really, it's really thoughtful. And I think the thing about your voter guide that's really helpful is if you read it, even if you go back and read a past one, it also helps you kind of think about what are the things that I should be looking for, expecting, or asking questions about. Mm-hmm. In my other spaces, you know, politically, like just the way that y'all go about it and the things that you highlight. And I think it's very informative for everybody to have a better understanding of both the process, what are the values, or even some of the key things to be taken out and paying attention to. Mm-hmm. Because most of us aren't fully, you know, educated on this political landscape, mm-hmm. and how to be involved, helpful. And I do really love that, mm-hmm. you're so intentional about wanting to educate people the process. Mm-hmm. Something I wanted to say earlier, and I didn't want to interrupt you, was, oh my gosh, our ancestors fought really hard to vote.
Yeah, they did.
To not participate with like a joke vote or sitting out or whatever it is, it's really a disservice. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, we know that political isn't all it and that there's other things that need to happen. But as you mentioned, this is a tool, one tool.
It's a tool, yeah.
One of our many tools. But our ancestor would be horrified.
A lot of...
For the non-voting.
Yeah, a lot of bodies, lives were laid down for us for this. And I will hold space. It is hard putting your faith in a system that has not, you know, supported you fully. I get it. It's like, mm-hmm. some people have voted for some folks and they've been like, that didn't matter. And I get it. I think it's, we're trying to push this holistic strategy that voting alone won't do it. So if you think you're going to check your box and that's it, like, nope, we gonna get you for the full wraparound. But yeah, it's, I always encourage folks, if you don't feel comfortable voting and you can, to call someone up who cannot and vote for them. You know, there's folks I've met who, Black folks, Brown folks, all the folks who, you know, can't vote. They're immigrants. And they're like, I can't vote in this election, but they wish they could.
What if they caught a charge?
Come on.
That wasn't even real? Because that happens all the time. And then
they're oh my gosh, go the prison vote. System. Oh yeah.
Like, there's been, if you need somebody, I got a couple cousins that you can vote
on
their behalf. They will happily talk to you.
I'm happy to say there's been efforts over the last few years to try to get folks who are currently incarcerated the right to vote. Like, mm-hmm. there are lots of places where you have to, like, fill out a form after you come out to vote. And this is something that's supposed to be given to us. And if you can't vote, call up a friend. Ask someone if they know someone. How can this vote help you if you want to opt out? But my hope is that you'll want to take some steps to examine why you want to opt out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I encourage everybody to vote. I like that, vote on behalf of somebody. And yeah. then you just kind of be in that through person, and mm-hmm. then you don't have to, like, emotionally take that on. Mm-hmm. But it's loud. I think we continue to see things sliding backwards because people don't participate. And it's like, y'all, but to even hold the line at some point, we have to participate. And your ancestors are on the other side flipping tables when you do not participate. They yeah. are. Like, yeah. I know that in my soul. Mm-hmm. Like, and they also don't agree with all of the things that are happening. But it's like, but for us to slowly move forward, this is one of the things that we must do.
100%. My last on the topic is, I was always taught that you vote, especially, I mean, ballot measures are something that typically most folks get very confused with. There's a lot of mm-hmm. false solutions in there, and it takes some time to figure out, like, ooh, this one word will change the entire meaning of this yeah. ballot measure, this policy. But with people and elected officials, like, there's no perfect candidate. And I think that's a hard thing. It was hard for me to wrap my mind around. I was mm-hmm. like, why am I voting for this person? Like, they're just the lesser of two evils. But sometimes you have to vote for who you could push. And I think if you're building political power, again, it's not a one-time moment. It's ongoing, and you're constantly pushing them. So I might not like so-and-so personally. They might get on my nerves. And there's been some folks that I'm like, Lot of mercy. Why you again? But you know what? They're willing to listen. Mm-hmm. They're willing to learn and be pushed. And I think that is a sign of a good politician. So, look for someone that will listen to you, that will take your considerations and be willing to hear research and things and change opinions. Mm-hmm. But someone who's not, that's they may look perfect, but they are not perfect.
Yeah. Get involved, y'all. Yeah. This, like, politics requires us all to be involved. And if I say this all the time, and I didn't come up with this. You personally might not be interested in politics, but your landlord, your bank, whoever, you know, holds your bank, your car loan, your boss, your daycare provider, the administrators at your kid's school.
The highway tax is about highway. To come.
Yeah, I mean, like, all of the places that you engage, the shopkeeper, the grocery store that you go to, all of these people, whether it's you realize it or not, are very much interested in politics and our money is very political. So you are being political when you spend dollars, when you swipe that card, when you accept that Venmo. So you, this whole like, oh, well, I'm not political. Everybody around you is. So you might as well tap in and pay attention because otherwise you about to get taken all the way advantage of. Again, see outside.
100%. 100%. This world is designed by someone. You should be involved in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if it's just to ask questions. I was in a space the other day and it was they were the youngest person in the space and they were probably like 24. They just graduated, 23, 24, just graduated from college. And she was asking all the questions and she was a little bit like off topic. And I was like, yep, ask those questions, push back. I don't care if they think you're hysterical. Like, you got enough people in this space who are like, this is not hysteria. It's okay. And it was beautiful to see, even though there was some things it was like, well, afterwards, let's like explain that to you so you do know. But that pushback and those questions. And also, this young person, she was not about to get pushed off. She didn't care. She was like, I still have a question. Nope, you didn't answer it. That doesn't make any sense to me. And some of the answers were like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That's a horrible answer. Like, that was at the beginning of this was like she was getting the answers of like, we heard you. That's enough of that. Move on. But it was like, it was one of those moments was like, but even if you don't know, and even if it might be disruptive, ask questions. Because ultimately what it did is it built some, you know, camaraderie, more questions. We were able to get into a deeper dive. Mm-hmm. And so I say, like, bring that to politics. You don't need to know everything. Okay. But you got to show up and ask questions. You have to participate and
get some stuff on the record. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what? Watch city council meetings. All kinds of people will come in there with all kinds of very random, unproductive questions, wild commentary, harmful ideas. Mm-hmm. So you are more than welcome as you are with your questions, with your concerns, and get involved. And the establishment wants people not to get involved.
100%.
Like, it's banking on us all saying, this is not for me, I don't care.
Oh, they love it. Yeah, they're trying really hard to diminish our voice. They're trying to make sure we don't show up to vote. They're trying really hard.
In Oregon, though, y'all.
In Oregon.
We can vote by mail. And I probably shouldn't say this on air, but I'm going to anyways.
Say it.
Our last two elections, I voted while smoking a joint.
I'm not mad at this at all.
It was very calming. It was lovely. It made the experience real fun.
You know how I feel about all of this. Yes.
You know, so like, there's no excuse.
There's no
excuse. A friend of mine, I wasn't able to attend and I had already voted. But she had a bar party where she invited everybody to her neighborhood bar. Bring your ballots. Bring your questions.
I love a ballot
party. They was
party.
Taking shots. They was just drink.
Do it with it could be an activity. Do it with a friend. Come on.
I'm like, there's no excuse here in Oregon.
Oh, so easy.
I know people on like the days before an election that will run around and pick up ballots. Mm-hmm. A couple years ago, I had somebody.
Were they on a bike?
No, she just drives around, but she like hits all, like everybody she knows. She'd be like, do you need help with your ballot getting turned in? And she's on it. She's been doing this for years. She'll take photos, everything. She lets you know, like, at 100% got there. Mm-hmm. She's your own little private
service. I love this so much.
You know? So it really requires us to do it, but there, it's here. It's easy. It's like, it's easy. I went to college in Louisiana, and you got to stand in a line.
That line
it's
is
the
no
whole
joke.
Day. I did. Oh, yeah. Like line service, I think I was like 18, and one of our things that we were in like this was like a student group. We were like bringing water and snacks to people because the lines, people were in line for like 18 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you don't know anybody with you to like hold it while you go to the bathroom, like some people have to take off work to be there. I mean, mm-hmm. there are some politicians who were making it. What is it? Gosh, I forgot what state it was making it so you can't take water with you in your line.
Oh, like, yeah.
Ridiculous things like that.
We don't have that here, so we don't have an excuse.
Oh, and people try to learn, and I've been in meetings where they're like, how does Oregon do mail-in? Like, they're so proud and, like, envious of how great our voter system is. And the reality is we have to protect it because people want to dismantle it here, mm-hmm. too.
Well, I mean, and I will say, too, to our younger generations, millennials and Gen Z, the way that older people vote is real, real serious.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very intentional. And I heard that and understood that in this like vague way of understanding it when I ran. I saw it in a very different way, both in the way that the voting turned out, but also in the way that I got to like just hear from people directly.
Mm-hmm.
I had multiple elders that came back from trips and stuff intentionally so that they could get their ballots in. And that was not just about me. But I just got to engage with them in a different way about their voter relationship. Multiple elders.
Mm-hmm.
My dad stayed in Portland so that he could get his ballot in.
Mm-hmm.
I know that was about me. I'm not mad at it either. But he took my mom's ballot to her in Ohio because they were starting to go, last summer in Ohio with family. So he intentionally waited so he could vote. He got his ballot in. Then took her ballot so that she could vote. But this was an intentional of them not flying together mm-hmm. to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I have another elder in my... I have tons of elders. I love elders. I do. I really do. That's who I be talking to all the time. her and her husband were going on this. They were going out of the country. And she was literally blowing my phone up like the night before the day. And she's like, AJ, I just have this one last question. I got to get on this flight, but I need to talk to you. Mm. And she was like, I'm coming to you with her stuff to talk. And I was like, well, okay, I can just talk to you. I got you. Whatever. Work it out. Answer your question. But that urgency, that relationship, and to get to witness that in a different way, you know, where our younger generations have all these excuses, and maybe because we didn't see the fight in the same way, but...
These elders, they've seen some things.
But it's a sacred thing, and it's an honor. And it's like, I would wish that all of us younger folks could hold on to that energy and put that in it. And it's also easy. Like,
it's so easy
for us.
It's
such an easy situation here in Oregon with our mail-in vote. We have no excuse. Again, I was toking it up.
Also, I would add, if you're a person who wants to channel your anger, you know, if you want some revenge, if there's a city council person that's done some things to you, I'm picking on City of Portland. Next year, vote against them. Like, vote them out. There's something really, I don't know, not even petty because it's real life things, but like, revenge that you can do. I'm not, whatever motivates you. If you motivate you for the elders, or you motivate for like building our community to be stronger, but if you're motivated by revenge, there's a lot of things you can draw from. Let's make this world better. Come on.
There's so many angles that you can come at this. And the participation is what is required. And the thing too, for us younger folks, particularly millennials.
Speak to us.
There is more of us millennials than any other group of people on the planet.
Ooh.
And all the other generations, except the alphas, okay? Then those are the baby babies. Those are the people currently being born today. So when you see a pregnant person, that person is pregnant with an alpha. They can't vote. Nobody else who is a voting age can make more people. Boomers, they're not making any more. They got who they got. Silent generation, they just got who's left. Gen X.
Come on.
There's not more Gen X than there is of us. And they just got who they got. There is a whole lot of millennials. There is a ton of us. And we be doing stuff.
Yeah, we do.
There's the two millennials right here that be like, moving mountains.
Come on.
And, you know, the ones right behind us who are grown up. So boomers, stop acting like Gen Z is some 7-year-olds. They're not.
They're adults.
They're like 25. They grown.
They pay taxes.
They're like 14 to 30.
Yeah, they're paying 29. Taxes.
They have children.
Real responsibilities.
They out here. But they can't make more of themselves. Us millennials, there is more of us than anybody else. And at the rate that we're making babies, alpha not go out.
What an opportunity.
There's not going to be more of them than us.
Come on.
You know, so I just say this as a, we have the ability to really move mountains, mm-hmm. to really put our foot down, to really make demands. And so that's what I'm asking all of y'all to do. Step up, participate.
Come on.
All right. Oh, we're going to get into the reparations.
Okay.
Same well, reparations word. For y'all, not a scary word.
Not a scary word at all.
I want you to, your thoughts about reparations.
Please.
Your demands.
Ooh.
Your requests.
Oh, my gosh. Your dreams. Yeah.
Your dream. Yeah.
Ooh. Well, if it's not obvious, I'm very in support of reparations. I don't think it's a one-time thing. I think it is ongoing. The harm, you know, impacted generations, and like we need generations to be impacted by this reparations that I hope to see in my lifetime. Dream. So this is like just off the top of my dome are the things that I would love to see happen. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So first of all, I'm thinking about the debt that I'm in, student loan debt. I dream that as a part of the reparations package, Black people and Indigenous folks, we get free education, no matter if you're going to a private fancy school, community college, trades, everything is covered for generations. I don't want to see one student loan payment go out by a Black person that has been impacted by slavery, like straight up. I'm thinking about housing. I know I have an interesting personal relationship with land that I'm trying to reconcile with. And I don't own my home. And I want to own my home. I'm like, gosh, if only I had some down payment money and some coins to make this happen. I would love a situation where I want it for everyone, but I want Black folks to be housed. Like it breaks my heart always when I see folks living on the street. But when I see Black folks who are going through crisis, like I think about my family members. I think about my cousins, my sisters. I think about people, and it hurts, and there's no reason this should exist. I want to make sure folks are housed, and I want to make sure that the money I'm paying in taxes for my property is going to Indigenous folks, and maybe they're owning the land and I'm just renting for them. I don't know. There's some things I want to see happen, but housing in general, whether I own or not, I want to make sure it's covered for Black folks. Oh my gosh, there's so many things. I just want universal income. Come on, money.
Yeah,
throw some money through. I think this is something, you know, money is, I'm not an economist, but I know money is printed every day and we find a lot of money for our military and police. So and whatever, you know, business that we're bailing out for the time, I know we can afford to put resources and money towards Black people and not just money that we can play with. I'm talking about money that's not tied to anything. I want pleasure money. I want to waste some money. I want to make sure that I am having fun and I'm living my life full of joy and happiness. And I hate when I see folks have to tie these to certain things like, oh, you can only have free food if it's tied to food stamps, but you can't buy sugar. Like, no, I deserve sugar. I deserve all these things. And you're not going to take away my opportunity for pleasure and joy. So I want that to be centered. I want funds and money around healing and restoring and trauma. I think there's so much that our community is dealing with that we still put on a smile and keep going. I know that trauma is passed on, and I want enough tools and resources that we can heal outside of what, you know, white people need to do to heal. I know they have some healing to do, too. That is not my healing. I want them to heal, but I really want spaces and tools for Black people to heal. That's my dream, like. There's probably more to that list. I want money. I want housing. Oh, my gosh. Healthcare. There's so many things.
Yeah. I mean, those are the things, too. Like, at the baseline would really drastically change folks' trajectory, their life experience. I mean, I love that you say this is not a one-time thing. This isn't just one payment, like, chattel slavery.
Say it.
And the ongoing oppression of Black folks, and the policy, the ongoing terror, mm-hmm. the ongoing harm, mm-hmm. the ongoing intentional exclusion and depleting of resources mm-hmm. has happened for over 400 years.
Speak on it.
And so this isn't something that is going to be resolved with one payment. This is going to be generations of payment. Mm-hmm. And this isn't something that people should be scared of.
No, we do it for other things that our society, you know, a budget is a moral document. Every time we put money towards the military or policing or other things that harm us, we are saying that we care about that more than we care about healing, preventative care, and restoration and debt that is owed. So
the debt that is owed. Let's say that
again. We have the money. Yeah.
It's a debt that is owed.
We have the resources. We have one of the richest countries in the world. We can afford this.
Well, and it's the invitation to right wrongs, mm-hmm. right? Like, we can't go back and erase this or pretend it didn't happen mm-hmm. or ignoring it or not engaging with it doesn't do anything.
Agreed.
Engaging with it and being intentional about it does.
Yes.
And the individual person, whoever you are, whether you are a politician mm-hmm. or a CEO of a company or just a regular neighbor who has mm-hmm. just some support job or no job or whatever it is, also can participate in this
yes.
and be intentional.
100%. 100%. Be intentional. Yeah. Get involved. Support organizations that are doing that are yeah support your organized come on like
but I mean it's like I think a lot of people think that like oh I don't have enough but like because our budgets are a moral document mm-hmm. if you look at your budget and say you know what I can put 10% yes. towards giving back to Black folks mm-hmm. I can put 10% towards giving back to you know whatever the specific cause or whatever it yes. is. But you can put a line item in there. And the more that individual, regular people mm-hmm. out here in community are talking about reparations and engaging with it and practicing reparations, mm-hmm. then when we start talking about it on the systemic levels, you know, through institutions, through policy, mm-hmm. through our legal system, through our, you know, judicial system, all of that, it becomes easier.
So much easier.
And it becomes... Yeah, it's something tangible that can happen.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you say, I'm into reparations, this is something that you should actively be practicing mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you should be open and willing to talk to your intimate community about.
100%.
That's what drives me up a wall when, like, non-Black people be so excited to talk to Black people about reparations or, you know, harm or dismantling the systems, blah, blah, blah. Do you have this conversation with your mama?
Talk to your own people.
Do you, like, are you bringing this up at your workplace? Are you bringing this up at your friend circle? Because let me tell you, my group chats, mm-hmm. they'd be like, here comes AJ with her bullshit. Here comes AJ talking about saving the world.
You're here for me.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'd be like, my group chats know that if I'm doing a fundraiser or, like, I participate mm-hmm. in a fundraiser, I'm going to be like, y'all, I put $30 up to this. Come Who can on. Match me?
Who can match me?
Right? Like, my girlfriend circle already know. They be like, mm-hmm. here she comes. If she's doing something, she's going to get all of us to do it.
That's how it should be. That's community.
Yeah.
I love that you said that. Like, I hope that folks, you know, they're going to learn. I'm hoping that you're going to learn more about reparations when you hear this. But you don't get stuck. You don't get stuck at the learning that you're not putting into action.
It's the magic happens in the doing. Like, yes. That is where the magic is. It lives mm-hmm. in that. That's where, like, in the implementation is where we see the growth. It's where we see the things happening. Like, all that pre-planning is one thing, but then when we actually mm-hmm. sit down and do the thing, I'll mm-hmm. use my kid as an example. We do all this pre-planning for summer intensives, right? Mm-hmm. He's a ballet dancer. Y'all could go listen to the other episode where he's on there. All of that planning and prep is a lot, right? And he takes dance classes. He dances about 20 hours a week, which is a lot. I get it. It's like a full-time or a part-time job. The magic for his growth happens in the summer when all of that planning comes mm-hmm. to fruition, not just our planning, but whatever program he is, whether it's our local program, Steps, PDX, shout out to them, holler at Steps, best dance program in town, Or it's him going away. Like the summer he was at Dance Theater of Harlem and now he's at the Royal Winnipeg Ballet. Oh no, he is the bee's knees. But all of this growth, right? We have all this pre-planning that happens both on our end and the school's end. Then these kids come and they work really hard for 2 weeks. And that's the implementation of this, like the goal of summer intensive. After summer intensive, all of these children, all of these young dancers, these artists have grown tenfold, whether it's in a big fancy program or our local program, even if it was just like a Parks and Rec program. But that time of every single day, you know, of the dancing, of the taking class, of the being engaged is the magic. That is where the learning, the growth happens. And then afterwards, we get to see the fruits of that labor. And so I tell folks this because you can pre-plan, read, and prep, but then if you don't actually do, you don't actually go to the intensive, you don't actually do the work, you don't actually participate, none of that growth happens. And so with reparations in a similar way, we have this opportunity. We can talk about it. We can read about it. We can be thinking about it. But when we start practicing it, even in small ways, right, like mutual aid, whether it's being a regular donor to Imagine Black or EGC or another great organization, that is where that magic, that movement happens. And that's where we get to start seeing and feeling the fruits of our labor. And reparations can happen from us individual folks. Again, giving it directly to one person. It could be through mutual aid. It could be, you know, a really generous gift to your neighbor who just graduated. You don't have to necessarily make a big deal about it, right? You can just be like, you know what? I was going to do this, but I'm going to do extra big because I also know, you know, what, like, the complications of historical implementation. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether it's somebody having a baby or a school thing or just a birthday, but you can engage with this intentional giving and returning of resources on an individual level. And I really want
I wish I got to hear this in my early 20s. I had a very narrow view. And the expansive way that you talked about this, like, there's a space for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Well, and it's like, once you do it, right, like with anything, it's a practice, right? Like, the first time I do something, it's not going to be necessarily graceful. I'll use this example. Somebody, I love hula hooping, and I was teaching somebody to hula hoop, and random.
Love it.
Super random.
I love it so
much. And the first time that she was doing it, terrible. And I kept saying, well, just keep doing it. Maybe we got to get a different hula hoop for you or whatever. Keep doing it. And now, but she started practicing, and she was hula hooping a little bit here and a little bit there. And now she's great at the hula hoop. She can hula hoop everywhere. She can walk around. She be dancing and hula hooping. Not because, like, something magically happened, because she practiced hula hooping. You know, so anything that you want to do, whether it's hula hooping, reparations, speaking a language, math, you practice it. It becomes easier and easier and easier. And I think a lot of us don't show up to this kind of work realizing it's a practice. We do, because we've been doing it for a long time, and we do it in, like, leadership ways, too. So we do have to have that, like, thing where we're trying to bring people along. But if this isn't your lane because you have something else as your priority, come to this ready to learn and to practice. And the more you do it, you'll get better.
I love this.
Yeah.
Yes. Take notes, y'all.
Reparations, start, add it to your budget.
Yes.
It should be a part of your budget. It should be a part of your regular vocabulary, and you should be comfortable asking people. And if you are not comfortable talking to your own community about it, your own personal intimate people, do not bring it to us Black folks talking about, I want, no, start at home first.
Start at home.
There. All right. So I guess now we're to the point where you ask me a question.
You know, I want to give some appreciation first, because this has been such a lovely space of moving between both the personal and, like, the work in a way that has good separation, but also blurred lines. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. I'm curious what you asked me, what it would look like for my, like, what reparations would look like for me. But I'm curious what, if you had everything, if Oregon loved Black people, what would it look like for you?
Ooh, first of all, we would loudly be having reparations, like, you start with a big, big one windfall to start. It's like chapter zero. Right? So that wouldn't even be getting in the meat of it. We even get started. That would just be to be opening the conversation. It would look like universal income. It would look like, as you mentioned, having access to housing. And I don't mean some sort of tin shack in a parking lot like we trying to do to the, you know, unhoused community. It would look like nice, beautiful, intentional housing and different things, right? Mm-hmm. A single individual probably doesn't want 4,500 square feet, but a family of five or six probably does. And so meeting people where they are in a really loud, intentional way, universal income, free education. But then also, I would say, making sure that people have the other resources they need. So, you know, back to school is happening as we are filming this or recording this. And being mindful that even with, you know, universal income and a job or whatever it is, that these are a very expensive time. So I would want to make sure that our kids, our families, individuals are supported with the full wraparound services that are needed. It would look like intentionally investing in Black-led organizations and communities and helping us be able to have the resources to steward what this looks like. And it's going to look different for everybody. But, like, giving those resources in abundance for this work to happen, for this healing to happen, I would love to see Oregon right the wrongs of being an exclusionary state and the harm that we have, you know, perpetrated. And additionally, is that Portland is a place where we're teaching urban development and sustainability to the globe. This is a very serious thing. It's one of the reasons why I'm still here doing this work, because this is very serious what we are doing. So in knowing that and holding space for that, we should be leading the charge in healing and righting wrong. Because when we're talking about sustainability, it should be like, how are we creating space that is sustainable for our most marginalized, oppressed community? How are we uplifting? Are we making space, making things better? So it would really be engaging with both that legacy and repairing that harm, and considering that Oregon is only like, what, 6-7% Black? It's very doable.
So achievable.
And we should be, since we're leaders in talking about sustainability and urban development, shouldn't we be leaders in this conversation?
Come on.
So for me, yeah, I would love to see robust resources. I was in a space not too long ago, and this elder, Mr. Michael, was like, resources are required to move this work. And I was like, what'd you say, Mr. Michael? I didn't hear you quite right. And he looked at me like, this chick. And he was like, resources are required to move this work. And I really appreciated him saying that, because I think oftentimes, not just within the Black community, but organizing spaces, we're so used to making do, making okay, making things work with whatever we have and piecing it together. And we deserve better than that. And chattel slavery, one of the legacies is that we still see in chattel slavery, people who were enslaved, our ancestors were given scraps, the leftovers. And so we still see that legacy in the work in nonprofits and community spaces of both just making things work with whatever kind of budget or whatever kind of resource we can piece together, or like in food access, giving people expired food. And that's wrong. That's disgusting. That's terrible. There's health, issues around that. So for me, it's really seeing like robust giving, no strings attached, intentionally making sure that people have their resources. And making sure that folks are good for generations, and also understanding there's like a level of healing that has to, like, within this, right? Like, trauma is passed down generation, like physically, internally, where we don't even necessarily, it's not our own trauma, it's like in our DNA. So also giving time and grace for that healing to happen and for us to move through that. But a lot of this has to do with resources. Give us our resources back.
Yes.
It's the debt owed. And like, the time is now. I would love to see Oregon really engage with this in a robust way, and also trust our community. Like, when we're talking about reparations, and I think a lot of people get lost in the weeds of controlling it and having these like checks and balances and being, you know, tracking it in this way. Like, first of all, y'all kind of lost track how much money you owe us, how much you've extracted.
Come on.
So I'm going to need y'all to have grace in sort of the amount, like the way that this is going to look like in healing. And let's just start with getting our dollars, like pouring the resources back. Mm-hmm. And then we'll figure out some of these other things along the way. Because it's, as you mentioned, this is not a one-time payment. This is needs to be an ongoing relationship. And I mean, if there isn't ever a case for reparations, how much talent have we lost because of poverty? Oof. How many, like the cure for cancer, the, you know, flying cars, you know, being able to talk to the aliens or whatever. Oh, yes, they're here, but they're avoiding us. We're the good ones, okay? You're listening. We're the good ones. All of those technological advances, right? All of this stuff is lost in the hood because we are not funding the next generation. We're not funding our own people. And this is intentional. Mama Dawn had asked me, what does it look like for us as a society to get more Hob? How, AJ, write a book about parenting. And like, we get more Hobs when we get more people intentionally investing in children and people. One of my best friends comes from wealth, and she always is like, I wonder where you would be if you had access to the same resources as me. And even today, and I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. It's resources. It's resources. And it's not just about me or my kid, but like, what does that look like for everybody, for every family, every parent, every mom, every grandmother, for every little person in our community to have the resource? And not gonna look the same.
Yeah.
But it would look very different, and people's, you know, traumas would be healing in different ways, our advancement in society. So when we're talking about what is reparations, it's investing in people. If you need a good example of what kind of people we're going to turn out with resources, because my child has been invested by so many people for his dance and his art. And that is a privilege and an honor and something we don't take lightly. But that, like the product of the person that we get, and it's weird to call him a product, but what we get to witness and see, is very different when you have resources. And we do have to like work to get those resources. It's not like, you know, Nike just wrote us a check and was like, I'm sponsoring him. Nike, you can sponsor him.
Sponsor.
You can sponsor. You know, boys' ballet clothes can be a thing. You know, but, and we just here in town.
down the street.
Not too far. But that's, you know, what does it look like for us to see young people? And there's a difference. Like kids that are invested in and their opportunities and their jumping off points look different when they have access to certain resources and support. So dollars. And if you are needing thoughts about how to, like, what does this actually mean and look like? Well, we could have so many more children thriving and doing things if you give us our resources, because that's what we are going to do, is invest in our children. Auntie Nation is such a good example of like most of the people that started my kids' giving circle, his whole Auntie Nation, you know, situation, but all women who didn't have children. And it's not like they were giving like $1,000 a head. They were like, I got 50 on it, I can 100 on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are that intentional sharing of resources and investing. Like another way that we can look at reparations is an investment, right? It's an investment in the future because of this horrible legacy. Yeah. And so however you need to come to this table to talk about reparations and engage with it in a robust, intentional way, it's sharing, it's returning of resources, it's a future investment. Mm-hmm. It's an invitation to do better and like to disrupt harmful legacies. Tap in. Let's go.
Tap in. Y'all heard me say a lot of I was feeling everything. I am, every time I talk to you, I'm reminded why I am so in awe and supportive of your leadership. I want to live in that world. And I think it's possible. So thank you.
Yeah, it's very possible. Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, I hope that people take away from not just this conversation, but the whole podcast and both of our bodies of work, is this an invitation to tap in? And everybody that we've talked to on this podcast thus far, there is an invitation to those that are listening and those in the world to tap in. Because what we're doing is legacy work, but it's also, it's not something that's like requires a master's degree or a doctorate. Like, no. We're educated to us, but
this is for everyone.
This is not something that you need a specialized, you know, degree or certificate to be able to tap into. It's really just like willing, like you said, be vulnerable. This is hard work, and to try.
I love it. Tap in.
Tap in. It's an invitation, y'all. I've been telling people all the time, it's an invitation. When I be hitting people up and be like, I mean, it's, I'm just inviting you to be better, to help, you know, to learn. Maybe it's a workout. Our intern got a workout the other day. I was like, I just forgot to let that, you know, bring that part up. But it was a bit of a workout, you know. It's just an invitation. Yeah, it's not scary. Not scary at all. Not the whole, like, getting in the mirror, turn lights off, and the boogeyman comes out or whatever. It's not that. If it was that, I would have already been tried it, though, y'all. I would have did it.
I might go home today and, like, say reparations 3 times. In the mirror, see what happens.
Okay, you do it. You tell me about it, because it's just me and the dog at the house right now, so that sounds a
little... Don't do it. I'll let you know.
I'll have to wait until I have somebody there just in case. I don't know.
What else is going to happen?
And, you know, and reparations and community work doesn't always... It's serious, but we also have joy.
We have to.
I've realized this before, but both of us have joy in our name.
Yeah, we do. That's why I think I like you so much. Yeah. I'm like, come on.
It's a joyful space. It's legacy work. It's not, you know, if you approach it in this way, too, it makes it...
more enjoyable. Long term. Yeah. If we were stuck in the despair, I don't think I can fuel this work. It's been years. I need to laugh with some folks.
Yeah. I mean, I see it, and that's the other thing, too, about this kind of work, is there is a lot of laughter and dancing and joke. It's not just serious. I mean, it is serious, but in the moving of it, right, in the physical moving of this work, there is a lot of joy that happens. Mm-hmm. And not just because that's our name, but, you know.
Bonus.
Yeah. So I have one book recommendation for everybody. It's called From Here to Equity by William Darity Jr. and A. Kirsten Mullen. And this book, From Here to From Here to Equality, Reparations for Black Americans in the 21st Century, in second edition. So this has been out for a while. What I like about this book is it really breaks down some sort of the practical, okay, this is what it could look like. This is how it could happen for newbies to the conversation. There's some historical whys, how we got here. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good rounded book to really jump in this conversation, to be informed. Mm-hmm. It's a great starting point. I would say keep reading, watching, listening, because it's an ongoing thing. Start investing those dollars. Yes. Give us our money back.
Give the money back.
I have a great reparation story where this woman, her dad passed away, and she was not interested in keeping the money. Because she was like, he was a terrible person and he was a racist. I was like, oh, goodness.
Give that money away.
Whew. And so she wanted to be both intentional about giving this money back, but she also wanted to be intentional about, like, righting some of his wrongs. And so she intentionally gave this money to Black-led organizations, which he would have hated, and she took a lot of joy in that. She was like, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to invest this money where he absolutely would not want it to go.
And it was revenge.
Yeah, it was revenge. she's like the sweetest person. Yeah. And it was really an interesting, just like a conversation and an engagement of, oh, wow, we can come about this in different ways. And she very much was like, I don't deserve this money. Mm. I didn't earn this. And I know that he, in, you know, collecting these dollars comes from a bad place.
Yes.
And so I think that, like, when I think about reparations and the different ways that people can go about it, it could be something as, you know, this is a person, like, it's not like her, and I got in this process, I got to know her a little bit, and, like, she's a teacher, her husband has some sort of, like, social work kind of job, but, like, they're not out here making $200,000 in a, you know, fancy car. So they absolutely could have taken this windfall and it would have been really helpful. And she was like, that would have been wrong. It's very important to give back. And so, like, when we're talking about reparations and we're talking about returning resources, it could be something as intentional as that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. I'm excited. I'm grateful for that story. And I'm excited to dive into this book. You gave me this book at your launch event for the podcast. So it's literally like on my nightstand. This is a good motivation. I need to open it up.
It is a good book. And anybody who is trying to start getting more involved, getting in the headspace and participate in reparations, I think this is a good starting off point, and definitely read it, share with somebody. Our last two things for the podcast for the day, we have a sharing assignment for everybody. Ooh. And so I want everybody here who listens today to participate in reparations.
Yes.
I want you to literally give some money away. Mm-hmm. No strings attached. Mm-hmm. This could mean cash apping a Black person that you know, $25. Yes. And you don't have to say anything. You just do a heart emoji and keep it pushing. Just, you know, you could say, oh, you know, I was thinking about you. I wanted you to get lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be maybe it's you're going to cover dinner for a whole Black family that you know. Maybe you're just going to, you know, buy a gift certificate and give it to the Black student union at your local college, right? It doesn't need to be a fancy, big production, mm-hmm. but just to engage with reparations. You could also, if you feel so inclined, make a donation. We've had multiple different organizations on this podcast, Imagine Black, mm-hmm. send them some coin. You could send EGC some coin.
Yes.
We've had Race Talks on here.
So
we
many.
Highlighted a bunch of youth organizations in town at our when we had Hobbs on here. You know, Operation Back to School is another one that we've had on here. You know, so there are lots of different places and spaces to engage with giving. But I want everybody who listens to engage with it. And if you want to go the step, like a little bonus homework, mm-hmm. talk to somebody about it. Talk about your, you know, say, hey, I participated in this activity and this is how it feels. This is how it felt. This is weird. And I want everybody, I don't care what color you are, to participate in reparations.
Yes.
Send somebody else just a little bit of money and really engage with that and really think about it. Like, how does engaging and actual just giving of some resources back to a different person, to an oppressed community member or oppressed organization, what does that feel? And find somebody that you can talk to. You got to kind of loop somebody into your homework today. Mm-hmm. But engage with that. And if you really can't think of anybody, you can always email you. I will email you back in the middle of the night.
Yes, I love this.
You know, so I want folks to really engage with what it feels like. What is it doing in your body? Mm-hmm. And also, like, engage with like the excitement and the joy part, because sharing absolutely brings up our endorphins of goodness and excitement. And it definitely plays with that. And I think that if you intentionally engage with this activity, you're going to even learn something about your own self more than us just saying your budget is a moral document, because it is. Mm-hmm. That's come up a lot on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But I want folks to really engage with this, like, right, mm-hmm. sharing, and think about it as it's reparations, it's sharing, it's returning of resources, and it's investment. Mm. And stretch yourself. Maybe you can only do $25. Maybe you can do $500.
Okay.
Right? Maybe, who knows? Mm-hmm. But really engage with it, be intentional, and definitely talk about with whoever. Just bombard somebody. I did this thing. It's my experience. This is how it was. And absolutely, if you are inclined, email me about it, because I would love to hear about it. My email is info@equitablegivingcircle.org, exactly spelled like it sounds. I would love to hear from you. I will email you back. And that is our episode. So if y'all want to know more about Equitable Giving Circle, again, Equitable Giving Circle, spelled exactly like it sounds. I mean, you did have to spell it out to find this. You can find us on our website, equitablegivingcircle.org. You can find us on the Instagram, not really on the Facebook. It's not our space. We're millennials.
The Book of Faces.
You know, come volunteer, sign up as a monthly donor. As always, I'm trying to grow our monthly donors. Mm-hmm. And also, how do we find Imagine Black teachers?
Yeah, you can find us if you go to imagineblack.org. There's links to all of our social media. Similarly, we have a Facebook, but hit us on Instagram. That's probably going to be the best. And hopefully sign up for our app and you'll get to talk to us all the time.
Absolutely. Hop on this app. It's just for Black people, right?
It's just for Black people. We are working on an accomplice space separate that they don't mess with us, but okay. They can get involved in some giving and some reparations work and supporting Black folks. But if you just go to your app store, whether it's Android or Apple, just type in Black Possibilities and you'll find our app.
It's a really beautiful app. The artwork is phenomenal. Like, even if you just go look at it just for that, because the artwork is delicious. So good. Thank you so much, Ms. Joy Elise, for being here. I really appreciate your time, your talent, your wisdom. I love being in community with you. I really appreciate you. And thank you all for listening. I'm honored to get to share this brilliant mind with you. I am honored to get to continue to do this work in community. And I hope all of you enjoyed. And I look forward to sharing with you again in the future. Thanks for listening.